Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
From Postcard from the Past and the award-winning Wardour Studios, this is Podcast from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. This is a place where there's always room for a view as we investigate old picture postcards and let their messages and images take us from banality to heartbreak, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads, and explore what it is that causes us to keep hold of these little cardboard rectangles. Each time now I welcome one guest, and it's their postcards that act as small clues to direct us towards memories, mysteries, and stories. I'm Tom Jackson. I'm delighted to say today my guest on the podcast is violinist, songwriter, musical director, Helen O'Hara. Helen, welcome to Podcast from the Past.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for asking me.
Now, you may well know Helen for her work with Tanita Tikaram or Graham Parker, but you will definitely know her for extraordinary work with Dexys Midnight Runners, playing violin on their biggest hits, including, of course, Come On, Eileen. First as part of the Emerald Express, then as part of the band proper and musical director. You'll have heard Helen's violin on the classic albums, Tour IA and Don't Stand Me Down. Most recently, though, and perhaps to some extent why we're here, Helen is the author of an excellent memoir, What She's Like, where she recounts her many musical adventures and enthusiasms, and full of enthusiasm, I might add, including how she had to let down the Bilbao Symphony Orchestra to join Dexys and have a number one single. These are the choices you have to make in life. And there's much more besides. It's highly recommended. Now, Helen joins us today bearing a, let me see, is that an SE10 postmark?
That's right, yes.
And where's that?
That's in Greenwich.
Ah, and why is that part of you?
Well, I came across Greenwich through with two reasons, really. One, my elder sister Jen used to live there, occasionally we'd visit her there. But it was my youngest son, Billy, who studied at Junior Trinity School of Music. He's a professional drummer now, and that was the sort of start of things. And me and my ex-husband used to go up to Greenwich to take him up there, sometimes go to concerts. And I just fell in love with the area. I think the river's got a lot to do with it.
Yes.
I love the Thames. There's something very soulful about it. What's lovely with Greenwich as well is there's a huge park, which is very hilly.
Yeah, it's all hill, isn't it, really?
It is. So, you know, that keeps me fit. And there's ancient trees there, really ancient oaks and things. And so, I just think it's a beautiful historical place. I feel very comfortable living there.
And now, Helen, when did you last send a postcard?
Oh, very recently, actually.
Good.
Probably a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't from where I was as such on holiday. It was when I go to art galleries, I always buy postcards, or generally buy postcards if I like the person's work. And this was a postcard to one of my very good friends. And it was a postcard I'd got from the Tate Gallery of an amaryllis painting, Flower, by Piet Mondrian.
Oh, lovely.
Which was part of the Hilma and Klimt exhibition with Piet Mondrian.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
The picture was not what I would have thought he'd have painted. It was beautiful. My favourite colour, sort of blue background with this gorgeous red amaryllis. And I sent it to her as a birthday card.
Very good.
And that's what I do quite regularly. I usually buy, you know, postcards. And some of them I keep and can't send for various reasons, because I bought them and you couldn't send them. So for example, when I was looking through the other day at my postcard collection to send another postcard to somebody, I found one from an Anish Kapoor exhibition.
Oh, yes.
And it was the exhibition at the Royal Academy where one of the exhibits was him firing a cannon
right.
of what would look like blood, really,
yes,
at a wall.
Yes.
And I bought the postcard and I thought, you can't send that to anyone,
no,
can you?
No.
So I'm going to have that forever.
You know, it's true, it's tough. It's, you know, because you have to match the card to the moment, don't you?
You do. You do. That's what postcards are about. Yeah.
Well, before we see and hear about the cards that you brought in with you, Helen, I'll give you a quick card of mine. This is, of course, a postcard from the past card, like I do on Twitter in the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old card from which I've selected just a bit of the message. So let's have a look at this one. I'm going to find the first one. This has gone missing. Oh, here it is. This is Tissington. Tissington in Derbyshire. I don't know if you know Tissington. It looks absolutely gorgeous.
It does look gorgeous. I don't know it, no.
Got a sort of duck pond with some, I don't know, goose-like ducks or duck-like geese, I'm not sure.
And beautiful stone on those buildings.
Yes.
Beautiful colour.
And it's a J. Arthur Dixon card where the colours come out rather sort of washed out and they look even older than they are, I suppose.
Yes.
And it is quite old. It's from 1962.
Oh.
And in fact, the... On the threepenny stamp, there's a special franc.
Yeah.
And it says, World Health Organization fights malaria. So there you are.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, all the paranoid people who hate the World Health Organization, they've been helping us all since 1962.
They have, yeah.
Anyway, this is an interesting card. It's for, sent to Mrs. Seal, as in the animal, at Blackpool. She's actually staying at the Bankhouse Hotel. I don't know if she's on holiday in Blackpool, she might be. And it's sent from, oh my goodness, Janet. It's a very long message, so I'll just read a part of it. Basically, Janet has had a birthday, and Janet is not shy about telling Mrs. Seal what she received. She says, Dear all, thank you for my presence. Life is lovely. Linda, life is love. So Mrs. Seal must be called Linda.
Mm-hmm.
I've had 32 cards, a £2 box of chocks from work, £2.10, a glass elephant, a Bambi, and Bambi. So I get a glass Bambi, I think.
Oh,
brackets,
yeah.
Big ones. I don't know how big. From Mr. Morris, a stocking case from Mr. and Mrs. B, box of chocks from the Wigglesworths, very generous people, the Wigglesworths, and a fluorescent yellow jumper from H&E, brackets, it's too small. A battleship charm, which opens, and that sounds quite fun. Another £1.5 of chocks, tweed perfume, Yardley's hand cream, hair talc. Can you get talc for your hair? Maybe. And 6 scarlet carnations from Eric.
Oh.
My party went off lovely, and I managed okay. Everybody thoroughly enjoyed themselves. So.
How lovely. What a lovely, lovely time she's had. Lots of chocolates to get through.
The only thing is, I just wonder if there's a line between being grateful and showing off. Because if there is, I don't know that she hasn't sort of taken a step into the showing off area.
Well, she's just so excited. She's just, that's the thing, isn't it? You can write things and you're so...
It's not a child, by the way. This is
no, but it's a list, isn't it, there? That is a list of...
And there's actually there's a PS and a PPS. The PPS, ooh. I think my candlesticks are lovely. So that must be another present, I suppose.
Yeah.
She's done well.
Maybe Mrs. Seal sent the candlesticks.
Yeah, but if so...
Then that makes it a bit of an afterthought,
well,
doesn't
quite.
It?
Oh, I knew there was some rubbish she sent me.
Yeah.
She preferred the tweed perfume and the hair talc.
And the hair talc, yeah.
Another quick one. This is Mount Snowdon, and it's a group of people sort of looking around, wondering what to do. Now they've reached the top of Mount Snowdon.
I've been up there.
Have you? Very unlikely sky. I'm sure the sky wasn't that colour when you went there.
Can't remember.
I don't think it's ever been that colour.
Yeah.
And we're into sort of playful territory here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a girl called... I'm not sure, actually. Maybe it's not a girl, maybe it's a boy. Anyway, they're writing to Granny and Grandad. They've written on the front, by the way. It says the summit, Snowdon, height, blah, blah, blah. And it says, yeah, on a fine day. Now, that implies to me that when she went, that may not have been what it was like. But I don't know. You know,
I love that.
Who knows? And it's being sent to Cuddam, Seven Oaks in Kent. Very nice. Obviously sent from the area. And it says, Dear Granny and Grandad, yesterday I climbed Snowdon. This is 1984, by the way. Mm-hmm. The first bit was fine, but then it was very difficult. At last, we reached the top. It was frezzing cold. That's really cold when it's frezzing cold. Mummy and M were meant to be coming up by train. You can get the train up. Mm. But it was booked up. So I couldn't got down in the train. So I had to walk the 100 miles. Then something about dad. I can't read the rest. Oh, then lots of love, Rachel. Kiss, 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 kiss.
Aww.
So I think it was a mixed trip up Snowdon,
yes,
for Rachel.
One Rachel will remember. 100 miles. God, I don't quite remember it being that far.
No, because on the front it says it's only 3,650 feet.
She
took the long route.
Yes, yes.
So, circumnavigated it, yeah, like a ziggurat. Anyway.
Oh, wonderful. Look,
I should remind everyone listening to this that images of these cards, so that you can have a look at them, are all going to be on the website, postcardfromthepast.co.uk. These and Helen's cards and any other cards that come to mind, they'll be there. Now, Helen, you've been kind enough to come along with cards today.
Mm-hmm.
So let's have a look at the first one you've got. What have you got for us today?
The first card is a card I sent to my mum and my younger brother Mark, who was still living at home. And it's from Utrecht in the Netherlands. And it is dated the 29th of October, 82.
1982. Now, you were busy in 1982.
I was. And this is from... I've written to her about the European tour that Dex's Midnight Runners, as we were known then, we're partaking in. And we've just finished a fantastic UK tour, a sellout tour, which often had two performances a night, you know, a matinee and an evening one. And I'd just left college, and this was my first proper job, as it were.
Wow, into the maelstrom.
Absolutely. And what I love about this particular postcard is the sort of joy, enthusiasm and excitement that it exudes. I'm about 25, 26 years old, I reckon. I'm born in 56, so 82, birthday in November. So coming up to 26, having the time of my life. And there's one line in it. It's right at the end that I really love, and it says, I'm squeezing everything in. It's tiny writing, and I'm squeezing everything in. And right at the end, my last sentence is, Mum, comma, could you send my blue bikini to Birmingham? And I'll refund P&P, postage and packing. Because most hotels have swimming pools, dash, boast, exclamation mark. And what I love about that is two things. First of all, it's that thing of staying in hotels with swimming pools. Now, I've been a student for 4 years, living on a student grant, gratefully, you know, but obviously very little money. Prior to that, I'd been playing with, you know, I'd left home at 17, playing with bands in Bristol, very little money. So I'm not used to a lavish lifestyle or having lots of money to spend. So there's this wonderful thing of just being in a position to have a swim in a hotel anytime. But the blue bikini, I was on a weekly wage then, a sort of retainer with Dex's. It wasn't huge, but it was good. You know, it was, I can't remember what it was, but might have been the same as maybe if I'd been a teacher or something,
right.
You
okay.
know.
Well, that's not...
It was good.
Presumably also you were fed and watered. So.
Fed and watered, and you were given per diems, which meant... You know, that was for, like, expenses incurred on the day, but often you didn't need to spend them because we were fed and watered, so you saved those, and that was extra. I could have afforded to have bought a new blue bikini.
And it might have been fun too.
But I wouldn't have thought of it.
Really?
And that's the great thing. That is the thing that I really love about that, because I was so used to, you know, if I've got a bikini at home, so yes. Why would I buy one now? I'm going to wait. You know, there was that sort of thing. It was very much more, it wasn't really a consumerist society then in 82. I don't think so. Well, certainly not from my...
Well, there weren't so many clothes shops around, definitely.
No, and it was that thing of if you've got some, I don't remember people really being that frivolous, or certainly maybe it was just who I was hanging out with or whatever, but, you know, if you had something, you wouldn't buy another one or... And I didn't have many possessions. I mean, I think the most of sort of possessions, apart from my musical instrument and clothes and things, would have been with my first wages from Dexys. I bought a portable radio cassette player.
Oh, right. Well, that's kind of a professional tool as well.
It was, absolutely. And a tiny little portable TV, right. Black and white TV, you know, with an indoor aerial.
Oh, yeah.
And that was... I'd splashed out.
And they were rubbish.
And they were absolutely rubbish.
Doesn't matter how expensive they were.
You spent all your time tuning it. So do you know what I mean? So I could have afforded it, but I didn't. Right. And I hung. And I do remember that blue bikini, which, you know, it wasn't great. I must have had it for years. And I remember wearing it when the following year, when we were touring in America.
And you still weren't spending loads of cash?
No, I was wearing that in Los Angeles by the pool. You know, I was still... Yeah, I just thought that was a lovely line. So
maybe that's what it just shows you had your feet on the ground.
Yeah, I suppose so.
So your mum would send that to Birmingham?
She'd have sent that to my flat in Birmingham,
so
yes.
When you next got back, you'd pick it up, kind of?
Yes,
thing.
And the flat was, I was still living in my student flat,
right.
Which was a shared flat. Sort of, there were three rooms, I had one, and we shared a kitchen and bathroom. It was a bit like the young ones. I can't ever remember anybody cleaning the bathroom or the... you know, the kitchen, but hey, you know, you don't notice those things.
Presumably, also once you're on tour, your feet aren't touching the ground, really. So the base is just back there somewhere.
Exactly. It didn't matter. That was the thing. I mean, the landlady who'd come round ever so often to collect the rent, I mean, she was amazed. I could see her sort of amazement that I was still living there. And it was
Thought you'd be in a palace somewhere, right?
Yeah. She probably thought I had millions of pounds now and yes. I'd be in, some grand mansion. But like you say, you know, I was rarely there. And people I was sharing the flat with were nice. And I didn't put a big importance on that. I never have. You know, it's always been more about what I'm doing, the people I'm with and the places. It's not about, you know, making a place grand or... You know, that sort
of thing. When you were on tour, were you sending lots of postcards home?
I certainly remember sending four to my mum. I sent this one from Utrecht. And I mentioned in this postcard that we're going on to Berlin.
Right.
So the next postcard I sent was from Berlin, where I talk about having a day off because we had very little time off. I was also doing a lot of interviews with Kevin. So that was the sort of time off. Used up.
So you didn't get the days to yourselves. It didn't quite work.
No, not at all. It was incredibly for long because you'd be doing radio interviews, and it was that thing where you had to physically go to the studio to do things as well. You know, now you can do Zoom calls and Zoom radio or phone interviews. There, you were going between radio stations, especially in America. That was a lot of, you know, exhausting. You'd start in the over breakfast, and go right up.
Drive you a bit mad as well.
It didn't. It did after about 9 months. And as I mentioned in the book, actually, it was a terrible thing for Kevin, really, because as a singer, you need to save your voice.
Right. Yes.
You know, a lot of singers I know won't speak much on tour because they have to save their voice. You know.
Yes. It's,
but yes. So I sent four postcards. So the next one was from Berlin, where I talk about Checkpoint Charlie and going over to East Berlin. So that was in 1982.
Yes.
Which was quite an experience.
And that would stay that way for quite a few years more.
It did. I went back again when I was touring with Tanita Tikaram. And the amazing thing was I went back again to Berlin just after 1989 when the wall had just come down. And I have photographs of me...
Really?
You know, on the other side with holes in the wall. I mean, it's extraordinary, extraordinary.
Yeah.
So that, you know, is a huge bit of history, really, sending a postcard saying you've been, you know, for the day to check.
Absolutely. And it's even a sort of archive document. Postcards are real things.
Totally. Yeah, they really are.
Yeah. Don't let the museum see it. They have it off you.
And the other two postcards were from when we went to America, which, of course, was extremely exciting, America and Canada. And the first one was from, it was from New York. And I believe, I had a look at the postcard, and I believe, again, historical, but pretty awful, the postcard says it was taken from the Twin Towers.
Oh, goodness me.
I know.
More history.
More history. So it's looking down an aerial shot on New York. And then the other postcard was from, at the end of the tour, from San Francisco, where it's all sunny and lovely and another world, really.
You've got some of these postcards, and I didn't know they were postcards. I wasn't sure they were postcards when I read the book, because it's not an illustrated book in that sense.
Sure.
You just incorporate them into the story, and they sit very well. But there's one here from New York in 1983. Do you think you could read that to us?
Yes, of course.
Because what's interesting about it is this... sort of almost train spottery fascination with the charts, but it's not. It's important because this is your career carrying on or is it stopping? It's important stuff.
Very true. Yes. So yes, this was a postcard sent to my mum, Mrs. Bevington, and Mark, my younger brother again, and to my other brother, Tony, his wife, Jill, and my niece, Romana.
Mean to buy several cars. Yeah.
Well, they lived literally across the road from each other. So that, yeah, exactly.
Come and have a look at this one.
That was probably a sort of afterthought. I better add Tony, Jill and Romana as well. And it's New York City, Friday. The postmark is 11th of February, 1983. And I write, New York is as I remembered, and I love it. I'd like to live here for a while. So far, we've played Boston and New York. Both were quite good, and the reaction was too. Eileen is 42 this week in Billboard charts.
Oh, gosh.
And the LP is 70-something. Absolutely, yeah. I mean...
Are you going to crack America?
Are we going to crack America? Yes, exactly.
Plenty didn't.
Tomorrow is a 12-hour drive to Toronto. I rang Sue. Now, Sue is my sister, my eldest sister, who'd emigrated with her family to Toronto. I rang Sue and hoped to see her on Sunday. There hasn't been much snow, although it's cold. Lots of love, Helen.
Oh, that's fantastic, isn't it?
And it is lovely. And I did see Sue after the show. We played at Massey Hall, and they all came along. And it was that lovely opportunity of seeing, you know, my sister, my big sister, who I hadn't seen for years. What, when you're working and you're on tour and you know, it was an exciting thing for them, you know.
Yeah.
Dexys were obviously becoming quite well known then. And
these were exciting shows you're putting on as well.
They were very exciting shows. They were very dramatic, very visual, quite different for the time, I think. It was a big band, 11-piece, I believe, you know, 3 horns, 3 violins, bass, drums, guitar. I think that was it, and Kevin, obviously. But, yeah, big shows, very choreographed.
Like nothing else.
So
really.
Exciting. Yeah, like yeah, I'm remembering
that. The sound and the visuals, I understand.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. And small sort of set objects, like sort of old crates with a sort of cloths over them, sort of sackcloth. So a bit of drama.
Yes.
Drama there. Not huge. I mean, compared to now, where it's all singing and dancing and,
yes,
you know, you don't know where to look and everything. That was quite a theatrical show.
Yes.
Well, a very theatrical show, actually, for the times.
And you weren't daunted by entering this sort of intense, visionary, super disciplined, creative world. This was something you knew from orchestral work, or did it... Because you seem to have embraced it from the book. You just sort of dived in and loved the creativity.
I suppose it was what I'd been looking for, really. And I'd found it. I don't think it's sort of luck. I think everybody, you have to work for what you want. But often it's, you know, to be in, it's sort of being in the right place at the right time when you're ready for that. If I hadn't have gone to music college, I'm not sure I'd have been ready for that. Even though I've been playing in groups, I think the discipline of that 4 years, I was incredibly disciplined. I mean, I suppose I'm a very disciplined person anyway. I always have been. And if I'm focused and if I want to do something, I'll try and do it and aim for it and try and get there however. But at music college. I'd gone into music college a little bit later at 21, and those few extra years of growing up and realising that in order to improve as a violinist, I really needed to concentrate on my technique and have some good teachers and knuckle down every day. And so I used to go in at 8:30 in the morning and leave at 9 at night. Wow. And just, you know, boyfriends would get really annoyed with me because I'm not going to the pub. I need to do another hour's practice. I mean, to the point, actually, I was saying, it was quite interesting, I was saying to my younger son, Billy, the other day, who's a professional drummer, that I was remembering one of my amazing violin teachers called Andrew Watkinson, who plays with the Endelian Quartet. He said to me a couple of times, you need to do something else. You need to get a sort of hobby, do something else, because you mustn't just concentrate on music. You need to live and yes. And so I joined a jazz tap class, which I was useless at, but it was fun and it made me meet other people. Physical, yeah. And I met other people and the music was different from what I was used to. And also joined a pottery class. He got me, you know, he understood, he could, I mean, that's very mature to see that and to suggest that at that age that you can't play music unless you live.
Yes.
You know, he was probably
so the thing
also
for your
saying
technique was to do a little bit less technique.
Get a boyfriend as well, you know, which I did. You know what I mean? Because you can't really, I don't think you can express music unless you've experienced.
Right. You need something
life.
To express.
You need something to
Otherwise
express.
Otherwise it's maths.
Or you can fake it, of course, right. But it's better if you've experienced something, I think.
Yes. Fascinating. Very good. Now, from the sublime to the ridiculous, as this often is, I'll do another quick card of mine. This is Mallorca.
Ooh.
Here we are, Mallorca. Mm-hmm. Sand upon the little multi-view, three images.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a modern card. I think it's from 2001. My goodness, we've broken the millennium barrier. I should throw it away. It's far too new. now, this made me laugh because it has musical elements to it, and I wanted to hear your response. So it's sent to Paul in Dorset, very nice, and it's sent from someone, Kathy and Roy, Joy, don't know, Kathy and someone. And they say, dear Kath and Trev, having a sweltering time here in Mallorca. Sun cream every day, but the sea is cold. Met a couple from Dublin at the square where we see the Four Tops, ABBA, the Bee Gees, and the Peking Acrobats, who were brilliant. The apartment is very nice, but we have diggers and drilling at 8:15 in the morning, which is very nice because we don't like it if it's too quiet. Love, Kathy. Now, I think Kathy may have forgotten to mention that these must be tribute acts.
I was just going to say,
I wasn't aware of an ABBA revival in 2001 in Santa Ponsa.
But obviously, you know, having a whale of a time and what great music to hear.
I just wonder, though, if she thinks it was real. If she thinks the Bee Gees were there. I don't know.
I wonder.
I suppose it made me laugh because, you know, the afterlife of groups is like...
And there's a lot of tribute acts who are absolutely brilliant around, aren't there? There's a lot.
Yeah. And it's a good night out, I suppose, which is, after all, often what you're after.
It's a good night out. And the it's always about the music, isn't it? If the songs are great, which those are going to be, then if they perform well, you're singing along, you're enjoying it, aren't you? And there's something about a live performance as well, even if it isn't the real thing.
Yeah. But it just made me laugh that she doesn't mention the fact that
not
for real.
No.
Next on.
Yes.
Oh, after
Beatles.
The Four Tops. Yeah, quite. There you go.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Podcasts from the Past, the Postcard Podcast. My guest today is musician Helen O'Hara. Here's a surprise. We've received a postcard. And it's from Swaffham. And it's from Mildred. And Mildred says, "The record you played last Sunday was Oh My Papa, played backwards by Eddie Calvert with his golden trumpet." Well, Mildred, you must be mistaken. I didn't play any records last Sunday. Certainly not Eddie Calvert backwards or forwards.
Brilliant.
On with the postcard stories. Helen, what's the second card you got for us?
The second postcard is from my eldest son, Jack, and it's from Taipei, which is Taiwan. And Jack, at the time, he would have been about the same age as me when I sent that first postcard to my mum in 1982. And he's also in the music industry, music business, whatever it's called, at the time. And he was in Taipei, which I'd never heard of, just to be honest. My geography isn't very good, and obviously we never went there with Dex's. He sent it from the UK, and actually he's on the front, he's written in brackets, "sent from the UK as usual," because that's what Jack used to do. He used to buy the postcard and then send it when he got back.
It's hard to get the stamps sometimes.
Sometimes it's hard to get the stamps. There might be the thing that you're actually going to be back before, you know, or just that mistrust of it ever reaching its destination.
Do I trust the concierge?
Exactly, yeah. But what's lovely is that he, and actually my other son Billy as well, they have continued the tradition of sending postcards.
Oh, lovely.
Billy sent me one in January this year from New Zealand when he was visiting there with his partner who is from New Zealand. And that was, you know, that was from New Zealand with the stamp, and it
Points then for Billy, I think.
Extra points for Billy, because that's gone. You couldn't have sent it from a further distance, but this is lovely because it's just what I was, you know, doing, sending to my mum. He's sending to his mum, so it's history repeating itself.
Yeah, but further afield now, because the world's got even bigger, smaller.
Yeah, bigger and smaller, I suppose, and it's. This postcard is incredible because, A, it shows where he's playing. And I asked him, I spoke to him the other day, and I said, what were you performing then? It was Amadeus, the film Amadeus.
Okay.
So Jack's job was operations manager with a company called Avex International, who show films, and then they bring in the live music. So it could be the Titanic, or it could be Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Here they were doing Amadeus and bringing in the...
So they must strip out the music from the film, I suppose.
Yes, yeah.
And special mix.
It's fantastic, actually. It's a really... I've seen, seen quite a few. And it is makes such a difference when you hear the music live. You're more tuned into it, as it were. You're more aware of the music, I think, than when it's in the film. Even though it might be great.
It has the jeopardy of being live. It's happening in front of you. It could go wrong.
Exactly, yes.
And you can miss the cue.
Well, it did go wrong once, Jack said, which was quite interesting. I know. I can't remember what piece of music it was, but obviously the conductor has a headphone feed to sync him up with the film to conduct and bring
that's
everybody
real
in.
Conducting, isn't it?
It is real conducting,
That is locked, that film. That film's not stopping.
It's
for
not
you.
Stopping, no, exactly.
You can't nudge the drummer and say slow down a bit.
Exactly. Anyway, something went wrong, technically went wrong. Oh. So Jack leapt onto the stage, sat underneath the conductor, and because his feed was okay, and he had to sort of direct the conductor for a little bit until they got their patch.
So who conducts the conductor?
Who conducts? Exactly. So
brilliant. Oh,
so it is a very, you know, a lot of things can go wrong.
Is he a musician?
He,
did he know enough to?
He studied the piano. He was a very good pianist. And their training, he and Billy both went to the Guildhall School in Music and Drama.
So
Jack was studying technical theatre, but they have to interact and do a lot with. And he'd also worked at the Royal Opera House. So he'd, where you have to, as a stage manager, you have to follow a score.
Yeah. Oh, right. So mucking about.
There's no mucking about, no. So he's a proper musician, like in that sense. I mean, following an opera score, I'm not sure I could do that. But but what's lovely with this postcard is, and actually I only did it today, there's a little cutout. So there's a picture of the hall that he's played with, you know, that they've performed with. And there's cutout figures on the front, which you can sort of push out. And there's three soldiers, isn't it?
Yes.
And so it's a remarkable...
And they don't... They're sort of marching along.
They're marching
slightly
along.
Sinister looking.
It is sinister. It's like on the front you've got this sort of...
Yeah, look at my jack boots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, one side is all very, you know, very, well, this is my scene. Yes. And the next side is, you know,
well, let's
watch
see. Let's say they're ceremonial. They're not sinister.
Yeah, let's
do
that.
Marvellous.
Yeah. Anyway, it was...
Yeah, no, I've never seen push-out pictures like that. Very good.
That was great, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I love it.
Halfway around the world. Well, halfway around the world in a suitcase, and then the last mile in a
exactly, exactly.
Well, the postman doesn't know any different. He just delivers it through a letterbox.
That's right. I do remember. You know, I don't know whether you did this, but we, as a family with my sons, but also when I was a child, because we used to receive quite a lot of postcards, and it was mainly from family, the odd friend, but mainly from family, and we used to attach them in a line with sellotape and hang them down from a cupboard or on the fridge.
Nice.
And they'd be there the whole year. And then when you took the Christmas decorations down and everything in January and the Christmas cards, they'd come down again and then you'd start a new line.
Oh, really?
With everyone's...
Maybe I should try that. I just put it on the mantelpiece.
It's the same here, but I might do that because I think that's the lovely thing, isn't it, that you... So whenever we went into the kitchen, you'd see the postcard.
Because the other thing is you put them on the fridge. That's very common, isn't it, to put them on the fridge?
Yes, the magnets.
Magnets.
Yeah.
It reminds me a bit of when you're talking to the hanging ones. Reminds me of the things you used to get in postcard shops at the seaside.
Hmm.
And I've got a few of these where they're stuck together with ribbon.
Oh, right.
So it will say salmon cards or something, and there'll be 10 views.
Oh, really?
And they're just, so that you think, oh, well, I'll have one of those, please, and you go and buy one.
Oh, OK,
But, I mean, these are probably from the 50s and a bit earlier, actually.
Yeah.
But, there's something quite pleasing about seeing cards dangling like that.
There is, and also I just think it's a lovely thing that... Because it does take an effort, doesn't it, to write
Absolutely.
It, to send it, to, you know, get the stamp. You've invested some money in this. You've thought of that person. You might even have written the address down before. I mean, obviously not my mum's, but, you know, if you're sending it to somebody you weren't that familiar, that you've had to take a note of it to send. And then you've got it for a long time to look at. Now, you know, I tend to, you know, like most people, you send a WhatsApp message with a few pictures, which is great, but...
It's ephemeral, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's gone. Never look at them again, probably.
Even though the pictures are often extraordinary quality and fascinating and...
Beautiful pictures and really interesting, and you can edit them if you want and all sorts, but it's they're flicked through. I suppose we receive a lot of pictures, maybe, over the day.
But these are a physical thing.
So personal. Yeah, so personal. I'm really glad my mum kept all those because she did have a habit of getting rid of stuff. But actually, I think she recognised anything to do with Dexys or to do with Michael. She did keep, which was...
Very sweet, very nice.
Very sweet, yeah. Really,
but also,
nice.
It's so good for you because you wrote the book.
Yes.
That it doesn't matter how much you... want to write and remember those moments and try and put them in the book in your own words, having them in your words from that moment is different, isn't it? It's something immediate about it.
It is.
And it's not you. It's you as was.
You as was. Yeah, exactly.
Very good.
And they were good triggers as well.
Yes.
I mean,
it reminded you of things.
It's like the blue bikini. I would have never remembered that, you know, but it's... It really wasn't a very nice bikini, actually. Anyway...
Maybe you were just feeling spare, I've got to say. So I'll send a bikini. That'll keep her quiet. No, I'm sure it meant something to you.
Yeah.
The whole band were doing it.
Yes.
Writing home for swimwear.
Yes, I wonder.
Well, at least you weren't asking for swimwear with sort of holes ripped in it.
No, exactly.
In the Dexy style.
Yeah, that doesn't bear thinking about, yeah.
No, you've got to draw the line somewhere. A couple of years later, it would have been very fancy swimwear from Brooks Brothers.
Oh, my goodness. Do you know, I don't think I ever bought any swimwear from Brooks Brothers. That's a good point. Yes. They must have sold it.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I passed the shop the other day.
Oh,
I was in New York last week, and I passed Brooks Brothers, and it was... I went
in... The branch you'd visited before?
Yes. That, I mean, there were two branches, but I went into the one on Madison Avenue, and... It had shrunk. It was so small. And I couldn't get my head around it. And I took a picture and posted it on social media. But I wasn't convinced there was something wrong. And then the following day, I think we were on Fifth Avenue and they had a Brooks Brothers there. And I popped in and I said, that one on Madison Avenue, is that the one that was there? And he said, no. He said, they sold the original building and they moved... sort of further along, just bought a smaller shop because I suppose, you know, everything's bought mostly online now, isn't it?
Yeah, and I suppose.
You just have a sort of smaller shop where you can get alterations done if you want or whatever. But
Did it bring these sort of initial shopping trips back to your memory?
It did. Immediately you go in and it's that there's a formality in those shops and it's, I mean, I'm not the... not the sort of smartest of dressers anyway, I was there like a bit like I am today in my jeans and trainers and things, and you go in and it's everything is, as I say in the book, you know, and as I remembered, all this sort of polished wood, and they're incredibly smart, the people who work there, and it's quiet, you know, there's no music playing,
right,
and everything's there's order in that shop, you know. You know, you can trust that people in that shop, you know. So, I mean, it's...
That's to make you feel comfortable with parting with your money, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And on your first trip, it was Kevin Rowland's money.
It was, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yes, he did spend a lot of money. And it was... What was wonderful with that shop then is us going in wearing... You know, I was literally wearing these battered sandals, you know, no socks or anything. Well, obviously not. Sandals and, you know, the sort of raggedy clothes. And they didn't blink.
Oh, you know, that's class, isn't it?
Absolute class. And I think there might have been a bit of relief when money was starting to be spent because, you know, but it must have been so, so weird for them.
Yeah. That's a scene from a film, isn't it? Going in one outfit and coming out another.
Yeah,
That's extraordinary.
And then we'd, you know, go in and try things on because some things needed altering, you know, and they would do it in the shop.
Right.
They'd come back in 2 days and, you know, they'd let down the sleeves a bit or whatever. And then when we made further trips back to New York and when we were mixing Don't Stand Me Down, we spent quite a bit of time there. So I spent a fortune by this time. I think I'd blown all my own savings, actually.
On clothes?
On clothes, yeah.
This is the girl who would get a bikini sent out from Bristol.
I know.
Corrupted by the music business into buying expensive clothes.
I know. We came back with suitcases full of them, and it was extraordinary. Exactly, that contrast of...
But the look that that was put together for the banner, that you put together yourselves, was quite shocking at the time. It was quite shocking.
I think it must have been, yeah. I mean, we'd got used to it, you see, because we were wearing it.
Right.
We were fed up with wearing the dungarees and everything. And we were...
Cold ankles.
Yeah, exactly. Nice to put on a pair of socks and loafers. And it was, you know, you felt good in these clothes. Yeah. And it is that thing, if you do put on something smart, you feel nice, don't you?
It's a costume, isn't it?
It's a costume. Yeah, you're right. And we tried not to wear them too much because Kevin was a bit paranoid that certain people might pick up on the idea and use it themselves.
Right.
And so because we were in Birmingham, it wasn't too much of a problem. So, or we might wear just part of it. We might wear just, you know, the shirt with some jeans or something, you know, just a bit sort of loafers with jeans or something. So not the whole full-blown look. But there was a bit of that paranoia, but we lived in it you know, when everything was released. That's what we wore all the time. And we had, you know, all the accessories as well. I had bags, and I've still got a few things at home. Not much, but, you know, still, you know, sunglasses, all sorts of things.
You must have been the only group whose rock star excess was very, very sensible clothes. There you go.
Exactly.
That's what made it unique, I suppose.
Maybe.
Well, look, Helen, thank you so much for sharing these cards with me.
Pleasure.
I say the same thing. I never know where the cards will send us. And they sent me some interesting places. Thank you for sharing them with me and the listeners. Quick reminder for everyone at home, these cards... All the various cards we looked at today are going to be on the website, postcardfromthepast.co.uk, so you can see them, including the curious gentleman marching around Taipei. Now, before we let Helen out into slightly overcast London weather, it's customary for us to end the programme with one of these. Mm-hmm. I'm just passing Helen a card to have a look at.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if you're familiar with these.
I am. Paris.
So it's a sort of oversized postcard of Paris.
It is huge, yeah.
But you can see what's special about it, no doubt.
Well, in the middle is a... there's a hole, but the hole is in a ship, and it looks like I've forgotten what you call them now, like a coat of arms? Would it be a coat of arms?
Well, I'll put you out of your misery. It's a musical postcard. It's a record.
Oh!
If you put it, bend it in the light, you'll see the grooves.
Bend it in. Oh, my goodness, yes, it is.
You got it.
Oh, yes, and at the bottom it says Colette. Oh, no, that's personal. I thought it said record. It's my eyesight, Renard. That's not... L'accordion
well,
The
good
Petit
people
Leon.
At Wardour Studios, young Tom, through the glass, yeah. has made a digital file of this.
Fantastic.
Oh. Oh, it could not be more Parisian.
It couldn't. The accordion, the valse...
So what have we got? We've got the Arc de Triomphe, mm-hmm. the Eiffel Tower, the Sacré-Cœur...
Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame.
Well, and the Seine.
Yes.
Wow. What? I've never seen that before, or heard anything like this.
I think they finished probably before our time, but they were quite big in the 50s and 60s, I think.
Were they? Wow. That's wonderful.
Not bad quality.
That's brilliant quality.
I know you're quite fussy when it comes to proper remastering, so...
I would accept this, though.
You'll go with
postcard.
It. If it's on cardboard, it's
OK. Do you know
what?
Okay. I think that's a great idea. Bands should take this up as a marketing thing because, you know, I wonder what this cost.
Oh,
do you know?
I don't know.
I wonder what that cost. Does it say anything on the back?
Oh, originally what it cost. Mm. Who knows? There is a message on this one, but you can hardly read it. Someone has written a message. It offers some advice. Quelque conseil. Oh, keep it carefully, no, I think it means don't ruin it. Well, look, as the fractured images of the City of Light continue to spin at exactly 45 RPM, that's it for this time on Podcasts from the Past. I'd very much like to thank my first-class guest for sharing the postcards from her past, Helen O'Hara.
Thanks very much, Tom. Really enjoyed chatting.
Oh, thank you. Bye for now. You can see more postcards with their messages posted every day on Twitter. Do follow me, at Past Postcard. And you can buy the book, Postcard from the Past, by me, Tom Jackson, at Amazon and all good booksellers. And if you're looking for podcast production, check out wardourstudios.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.